Good afternoon. It is one bell of the afternoon watch. This is your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair on the magical Isle of Vashon, broadcasting to you live from the voice of Vashon, 101.9 on the FM band, and streaming live all over the world to Captain Joe's people, wherever they may be, on voiceofvashon.org. I hope I've got this set up right. I am looking at the screen on the other computer, and it is showing me things that do not look particularly good. I'm going to try something here. Okay, so here we go. I am going to continue broadcasting. It is showing me all sorts of sine waves on the other screen, and I am going to be confident that the ever-skillful Captain O'Brien is going to be able to put this up on the archive at the end of the day. My greetings today go out to all of Captain Joe's people who may have awakened this morning with a sense of disquietude, because I did. And I am going to explain that a little bit when I finish with my opening remarks and also with the binnacle list, so that we can together figure out what is going on. And I know what we're going to do about it. What we're going to do about it is that your captain is going to yet once again fulfill the mission that I have set for myself with all of you, to make the half hour that you spend with me on a Tuesday afternoon to be make you feel just a little bit better about yourself and about the world in which we live. And I have a couple of things about which to talk that will make that happen. Because once I figured out what was going on in my own mind and in my own heart and in my own soul, I then shifted over to the situation where I make myself feel better about what is going on in the world around us and what we can do about it. The binnacle list today has two sad entries, in that two of the parents that I reported on last week who had crossed their bar, the funerals for them were this last week. And in at least one case, it was specifically made clear to all of us that it was for families. And so we sent, the road family, the group of people that live on my private road and about which we have coalesced since, in particular, Mary's death, we sent flowers, and we sent much in the way of energy and thoughts and hopes to that family. And then in the other case, because it was on the mainland and because I believe that there was not a ceremony the way that we think about it, I sent a letter to that particular friend. In my own case, all continues to be working as well as one can hope, as well as I can hope. And in any case, I have not had to exercise the training that I received from the ever-lovely Vivian. I meet with my urologist tomorrow, a new one, a lady MD by the name of Dr. Chu. And because we're coming up on the Chinese New Year, I will take some gold coins. Actually, what I will take probably are some chocolates that are wrapped in gold foil to look like gold coins, so that we all have a recognition not only of the New Year in the Western world, but also the Chinese New Year. And I expect nothing but huzzas and good things from Dr. Chu, because the Yalu River continues to flow. You need not be concerned about standing next to me and not melting yellow snow. So why was I in this disquietude this morning? It was in the midwatch. The midwatch, of course, is the time of most darkness and most danger for a ship at sea. And there are a number of things in my life that had happened during the midwatch that were not happy events. And I woke up, because Sailor came and nudged me, and he said, would you please inspect the contents of my bowl? I believe that it is completely empty, and Blossom and I need a little bit in the way of midrats. That's the contraction, Sailor's contraction, for midnight rations. A well-managed ship always puts out for the crew, for the watches that are stood during the night. They put out some rations. They are not a huge amount, or they're not regal in terms of quality. They are cold cuts and things like that, peanut butter, things like that. But they're in any well-run ship, there are midnight rations, and those are called midrats. And so Sailor came to me and told me that his midrats were at the zero level, and would I please get up? And so I got up, and I had this sense of disquietude. And I immediately ran my checklist. Sailor had called me from his nighttime position, tucked in as close as he can get up against my back. Blossom was still alive. I do have that concern every morning because she is, after all, 18 and is a little fragile, although she just keeps on breaking that ice. So she was resting her eyes on the heated deck in the downstairs head, which is her preferred sleeping place when she's not up topside with me. And she was not only breathing, but she was there, and she even let me pet her once. And then she got up and joined Sailor in the food bowl inspection, the midrats inspection. So it wasn't that. The Christmas tree had not fallen over. It needed a little bit of water, which it got. The light, Browns Point light, was and is watching properly. The traffic separation scheme, TS number 3, is on station and watching properly. My house was reasonably warm, but the wood stove needed some attention. But all of these little things which go to make up the morning checklist for your captain all were in place and were working as they should. And then I thought it through a little bit, and I realized that the night before I turned in, when I got 8 o'clock reports from Sailor that all was secure about the ship for the night, there's a lot going on in this world, and none of it is happy. And so I thought all of that through, and I came to the same conclusion that I frequently do when I get into these backwaters, when I back myself into these particularly unhappy times. And I think, well, what can I do today? I looked around my house, and I saw, among other things, a Christmas gift from my granddaughter, Simone. It was a thing that she had made. It was a sign, and it was something that she had made several of them for her grandparents, and I was the fortunate recipient of one, and it says, "Explore." Something that she had herself made by herself, and that was my Christmas present from her. And I said, by golly, Simone, I am indeed going to explore today. And I am not going, because I can't do anything about Venezuela or Iran I can only be very concerned about Iran because one of the families in my road family, one of my much loved people on the road, has family in Tehran. He comes from Iran originally, is now an American citizen. I can't do anything about that except be there to talk to him when he wants to talk about what's going on with his family. I cannot do anything about Greenland except to remember my own contact with the lovely people in the Greenland Home Rule government. I've told that story on here on before about the herd of muskox that we moved around on the island of Greenland for the Greenland Home Rule government with my much-loved Northwind. Not under my command. That was when I was the ICE boss. Under the command of a much-loved friend who has now crossed his own bar. And for which he never actually forgave me for giving him that mission. A herd of muskox makes a lot of mess on a well-managed and immaculately kept-up ship. I can't do anything about what's going on there right now. And so I thought, okay, I will, Captain, first of all, sit up straight. In fact, I need to sit up straight right now. It's a good reminder to do that. Captain, sit up straight. Stand up straight. You've got to put out, not only does the captain show no fear, but the captain has to fulfill that mission. In fulfillment of that mission, I found two books. So we're going to do two books this week instead of a book and a magazine. And the first book is a children's book. It is called Good Night, Coast Guard. And this is one of a series of books, Good Night Something. And this one is Good Night, Coast Guard. And it is co-authored by a man by the name of Michael Tugias. And Michael is the co-author of the book, The Finest Hours, what we have talked about. I have had as a book of the week on this broadcast. He is a co-author of that book and of the film that was made from that book. The name of the book is Good Night, Coast Guard. I opened it up, and the first line is, "Good morning, mighty Coast Guard cutter, protecting our shores. Are we ready to share a wonderful day?" And it shows a Coast Guard cutter, and at the jackstaff, it is showing the Coast Guard ensign. And I'm saying to myself, oh boy, whoever it was that was the technical advisor on this missed that. So I turn the page over to the next one. The next page says, "Good morning, brave captain. The captain commands the ship." I hope that I was always a brave captain. And the illustration that goes with that page shows the cutterman insignia in the right location. It shows the command at sea insignia on the over the starboard pocket in the right location. And so I said, well, maybe they did get it right after all, and that was just a minor aberration, and I will carry on from there. The next page says, "Ahoy there, hearty crew, preparing for a day at sea." And the illustration shows all of these eager sailors swabbing and painting, and it just warmed the cockles of this sea captain's black heart. And I kept going through the pages, and they all have to do with things like, "Good afternoon, buoy tender. These boats pick up buoys for repairs." And one that says, "Go rescue swimmer, braving all conditions to save lives." One of the pages says, it shows a rigid hull inflatable going across a bar, and it says, "Go Coast Guard, you are the best." And then finally, the page that I like the best, it shows Polar Star, hull number 10, and a polar bear, which means that she's up in the north. "Good night, powerful icebreaker. Crack that ice." And the last page shows six young sailors in a cutter berth deck. And it says, "Good night, Coasties. Sleep tight, shipmates. Thank you for sharing a wonderful day." The name of the book is Good Night, Coast Guard. I keep it on the table right next to Captain's Chair in the living room of Captain's Quarters, because every now and then when I need to be reminded of what a wonderful outfit it is that I have belonged to since I was 17, that is it. And if you want to have a lovely little gift for someone that you would like to share part of your life with, if you are a wearer of the shield, Good Night, Coast Guard is the name of the book. The other book is one that is a sleeper in a couple of ways. It is titled A History of the World in 12 Shipwrecks. And it's by a man by the name of David Gibbons. Now, this book is important to me for a couple of reasons. The first one is that it was a birthday gift from my much-loved friends next door, my dear and good doctor and his wife, Michelle. Michelle, she who owns the chain of kitty vending machines all over the magical Isle of Vashon, and from whom came Sailor. And it has a lovely inscription, which is so, I'm not going to read it. The last line of it I will read. It says, "Here's to fewer shipwrecks and more history. With all our love and gratitude, Scott and Michelle." So that's the first reason. It was a gift from much-loved friends who made a conscious decision in selecting something that they knew that I would be particularly interested in. The second reason is that although it purports to be a history of the world with 12 shipwrecks, it does not include the Endurance shipwreck, which to me is one of the ones that should always be covered in any discussion of shipwrecks all over the world. And the other challenge that I've had with it is that it has a lot of archaeological terms. And because I'm not an archaeologist and I know very little about that particular discipline, I have had to go to the dictionary. I use the Oxford, American edition of the Oxford Dictionary, to get definitions of some of the terms. But what I found in particularly interesting was that in the description of one of the shipwrecks, and this had to do with the second of the 12, in the book, in the chapter called Royal Cargoes at the Time of Tutankhamun, that is the Tut, whose tomb was opened by Carter in the 1920s. And it talks about the custom of eyes either being painted or attached in some other way to the forward part of a ship. And this is particularly interesting to me because this is something that we still do. And when you hear me talk about the posting of lookouts, you will hear me say something like this. Lookouts are to be posted as far forward in the eyes of the ship as is possible or practicable. Eyes have been put so that the ship can find her way and to guard the ship and to warn the captain in particular, who in sailing ship days was all the way aft, of dangers ahead. And in the Mediterranean, and in Asia, cultures, civilizations that are completely as far apart in this world as you can possibly get. And yet there they still have adopted that idea that eyes will be put on the bow of the ship to warn the captain to help guide the ship through the fog. And we still refer to the eyes of the ship in today. It's a fascinating book. I will recommend that should you get a copy of it, you probably can find it in any good library, that should you get a copy of it, that you also get a good dictionary, because there are a number of words and expressions in it which are, they were completely foreign to me, and I had to look them up. And I must confess that I'm only up to wreck number 3. I now have 9 more to go. But I am enjoying the book, and in particular am I enjoying it because it came to me from much less friends who picked it out, knowing that it was something that I would particularly be interested in and enjoy. I'm going to talk a little bit about Venezuela from a historical point of view, and I'm going to tell you what the connection of your captain to the oil business in Venezuela is, and tell you some things about which you may not know, and about which you will certainly be fascinated to hear. The oil reserves that there are in Venezuela are in particular in the Lake Maracaibo. Lake Maracaibo is a lake which is almost completely enclosed within the boundaries of the country of Venezuela. And I did not know that there are more of the proven oil reserves in the world in Lake Maracaibo than any place else in the world. I did not know that. I knew that there was a lot there. Back in the 1920s, about 1928, when that oil was first discovered in Venezuela, in Lake Maracaibo, the Standard Oil Company, then called Esso, S-O for Standard Oil, now Exxon, built a huge refinery on the island of Aruba, which is about 25 nautical miles just outside the entrance to the lake, to Lake Maracaibo. Built a huge refinery there. They refined everything. They would take the crude oil that came over from Lake Maracaibo. And the company that was formed up was called Lago Oil and Transport. And the transport side of it consisted of a number of shallow draft tankers, because there's a bar right across the entrance to the lake. And these shallow draft tankers, starting in about 1929, would load crude oil from the wellheads in Lake Maracaibo and would then cross the bar and go to the Lago Oil refinery on the island of Aruba in the south end of the island in the town of San Nicolas. Why do I know all of this? I know all of this because after World War II, my dad was working for Lago Oil and Transport, and I lived in Aruba in San Nicolas. This was long before it became a haven for casinos, long before all of the activity moved up to Palm Beach, which is at the north end of the island. So these shallow draft tankers would come across, and then the crude oil would be refined into a number of different products. At the top of the pile, of course, was 100-octane aviation fuel, and then what was left over down at the bottom was that crappy old black oil. That's the kind of thing that we burned in my Ingham. Steam-powered ships could burn black oil, burn black oil for the few that we still have. So the World War II came, and the Germans sent submarines to lie in wait off of the coast of Venezuela and off of Aruba. And as the in particular, the ships with refined aviation fuel would come out of Aruba and would be headed to, in particular, Bayonne, New Jersey, which was the New Jersey terminal for Standard Oil, and would pick them off. I lived in Aruba in the foreign colony in after World War II, 1947, 1948, 49. And that's where I learned to sail with my dad, taught me how to sail in snipes. Parenthetical insertion here, that's where I rolled a snipe. Completely upside down. But that's another story for another time, which I think I've told once on this broadcast. When we lived there in 1946, the beaches were still oil-coated. There was still a lot of oil on the beaches. Because when those ships were sunk, of course, all of the oil would then get onto the beaches. It wasn't until early 1942 that there was an effort which ultimately became successful to track and to kill those submarines. But until that happened, there were a number of tankers that were sunk, and they were sunk by those subs that were just lying in wait right off of the harbor entrance. And they would pick off the ships that were carrying the refined product rather than waste their torpedoes on the ones that were carrying the crude. Although a couple of those were taken out as well. I tell you all of this because the idea that there's been oil in Venezuela goes back a long, long way, and it's been coming out of the ground from under Lake Maracaibo for many years. When the oil business was nationalized in Venezuela, the companies like Exxon and the company, or Esso, now Exxon, the companies like British Petroleum, all the other companies that were taking crude oil and were either contracting to have it refined, or there was a small Shell refinery up on the north end of the island. All of them had all of their property appropriated by the Venezuelan government. And that's what we're hearing about right now. The oil company executives are saying, well, golly, I want to recover the billions of dollars that we lost when the oil business was nationalized. The immediate effect for Aruba was that the Lago Oil and Transport Company went defunct. The refinery was taken down. The port at San Nicolas was cleaned up, and somebody figured out that this would be a great place for a tourist destination, and that's exactly what happened. So if you go to Aruba today, you are going to the Palm Beach end. You're going to Aranjestad, which is the capital. It's in a very, very interesting town. And it is named for the House of Orange, which is the Dutch royal family. And Aruba, Bonaire, and Curaçao, the ABC Islands, are all part of the Kingdom of Netherlands. They are self-governing, and Aruba is the money generator through the tourist business. Curaçao is an absolutely beautiful little piece of Holland or the Netherlands put into the Caribbean, and Bonaire is a dive place. People that dive go there a lot. I lived there until 1950, maybe, 1949. I went there for the last years of my grade school and the first year of my high school. And it was a very busy part of the oil business of the world in those days. So we're not talking about something that just happened yesterday or the day before yesterday. There's been oil coming out of Venezuela since the 1920s. And the nationalization of the oil business in Venezuela is the genesis of all of the things that are going on now. And I hope that this little explanation has been both of interest to you and will help you give just a little bit of background about what is going on. And a quick update on the MSC Baltic 3 that's still aground on the west coast of Newfoundland. I keep watching this because I keep hoping that they're going to get her off before she breaks up completely, and now I'm of the conviction that no matter how skillful the salvage master is that goes up there to try to salve her, that she is going to end up breaking herself apart on those rocks. And I will keep everybody posted. And in the meantime, be of good cheer. Know that your Captain Joe is of good cheer. That regardless of what goes on in the world, those things that we cannot influence or control, we need to shift over to things that we can influence and control, and that is the world that is right around us. All of you are part of that world for me. And so it is with today. I am saying to you that we are now into the new year, that it is time to reach out and touch fingertips with somebody close to you that could use a little bit of help, maybe a strengthening message. And with all of those things said, we have come to the end of our time together for this week. This is your Captain Joe. We never say goodbye. We say until we meet again. And I remain, as always, on station and watching properly.